monstrous creatures always shooting off their mouths.
Catapult of propaganda. The truth out there.
Some alien race to come down and threaten us. The military industrial complex. This were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier.
Welcome to PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I'm Sharon Gilbert, and welcome to our lovely bunker, everybody. And many of you are actually going to be downloading this tomorrow. So even though today, the evening that we're recording this here in the U.S., is June the 5th,
yes,
many
it is
of you
already
are going to be listening to June the 6th because, well, many of our listeners are overseas.
That's right. In fact, it is already after midnight in Greenwich Mean Time.
No.
And in the meantime, we will continue on with this, our final week of our prophecy series.
That's right. And wrapping it up is going to be David W. Lowe for us, mm-hmm. and he's going to be sharing his take on the end time prophecy. That's from Scripture. But you know what? We just talked about 666 a few minutes ago, and I have to share something that the listener sent to me in the email earlier this evening, and I think it's pretty funny. As of right now, we're recording this about 7:53 p.m. Central Time, mm-hmm. United States time, on our forum under the general discussion topics. There are 666 topics listed.
How interesting.
Interesting indeed.
Quick, somebody come up with an idea of something to talk about. Well, David W. Lowe will be with us starting tomorrow night, and we'll do a three-part interview based on his study of the timeline of the way the end times are going to go.
That's right. If I didn't make that clear, he is starting tomorrow night.
Right. Tonight, we're just going to take advantage.
It's blather night. Yes. We haven't had a good blather in a long time, and boy, do we need it. We just want to start off by saying, at least I do, 666. As far as a date in time, mm-hmm. I'm not so sure that it means anything prophetically. I anticipate tomorrow coming and going with nothing happening. And I'll tell you what, that's probably the best thing for everybody.
Sure.
But on 6/7/06, there are some who will look at that if nothing happens and pray. We just pray nothing does. They'll look at the Christians who were freaking out about it, or just Christians in general, especially fundamental prophecy-believing Christians, mm-hmm. and they'll say, see, that day came and went, nothing.
Yeah.
You guys are ate up.
So we just want to make it clear, in case anybody does make a comment about that, that the day in prophecy has no significance whatsoever.
No. The number of the beast is 666.
Yeah.
That's what Scripture says. It doesn't say 666. It says mm-hmm. 666. It says it is the number of a man.
Right.
And so I'm doubting that it has anything to do with a date on a calendar.
Exactly. So let's just we pray that nobody tries to take advantage of the day for anything more offensive than launching the new Left Behind book. And we'll just
Hell, Michigan. Hell, Michigan.
Yes.
Is partying down.
Oh, that's right. There is a town in Michigan
there's,
called Hell,
there's
isn't
a
there?
Town, and in the wintertime it freezes over.
Mm.
Just about
yes.
every year.
But of course, in Dante's Inferno, part of Hell had frozen over. So that's
true.
Not,
so, well, yeah. there you go.
No surprise there. No
see,
surprise.
And why aren't the Cubs winning then? That's what I want to know.
See, that requires at least a 51%. Yeah.
Of Hell to freeze
yeah, freezing
yeah,
over.
No. No, there are a lot of things going on tomorrow, and I'm sure that as far as the pagan and occult cultures, there are lots of things going on tomorrow, sort of an in-your-face to Christianity.
Possibly.
We don't
possibly.
Fear this day. In fact, we embrace this day. And we do know, you've heard us talking on here many, many times, numbers mean a lot to the occult.
Yeah.
And 666 is a number that they take seriously.
Mm-hmm.
So if anything does happen, look at that end of things.
Right. See who might be trying to take advantage of the, not just the date, but also just the numerical sequence of six, six, mm-hmm. and six. You know, the multiple numbers.
You want to hear something odd, though? You know how the Omen opens tomorrow?
Right, yeah. Good cast,
Pete,
by the way.
Pete Postlethwaite, mm-hmm. who is in that picture.
Right.
Great actor. He
One
was
of my
in The Usual Suspects.
Mm-hmm.
During the filming of The Omen, the remake that is coming out tomorrow, his brother was playing poker
mm-hmm.
and drew three sixes. No, he died.
Oh. Oh, wow.
He died. You didn't see what was coming at all. No,
no,
he died. Well, he didn't see what was coming either.
I guess not.
To his credit, Postlethwaite says, well, you know, it's just one of those things. He had a heart attack and he died.
Yeah.
He says, I think it was coincidental. But if you do a little searching on Google, you will learn that during the filming of the original Omen, there were quite a number of accidents mm-hmm. and odd things that happened on the set.
Hmm. And Pete Postlethwaite also co-starred in a movie called Dragonheart.
That's right.
Now, remember, my new novel is Iron Dragons. And in the movie Dragonheart, he played Brother Gilbert.
Oh, that's right.
Ha! No, I shouldn't be making light of it. That is a bizarre tragedy that took place.
And you know, I'm sure he was very, very sad to lose his brother. As I recall, his brother, if I remember the article correctly, he was in his 60s.
Hmm.
Now, I don't write that down and say, oh, she said, because I'm just trying to remember. I don't have the article in front
of me. Well, I know that Pete Postlethwaite is in his 60s.
Yeah.
Or I'm fairly certain.
Well, I would
he's
say
been
probably
for
is, yeah.
But, yeah, that, well, forgive me my outburst there. I wanted to, you know, took advantage of the mention of the names there, and I didn't know where you were going with your story. So
well, you couldn't help that. Well. But anyway, that's that story. So that's an odd thing about 666, and who knows? We may see lots of things. Matt Drudge on mm-hmm. Drudge Report is linking to odd 666 things, and he has on there that the current mortgage rate is 6.66%. However, the story he links to is from May 31st.
Oh, way to go, Drudge.
Yeah, I know. He's stretching.
Yeah. There are, I'm sure, you know, there will be people who will be extra sensitive to things that are going on tomorrow.
Or today, depending on...
Or today, depending on where you are and when you're listening to this. There is an interesting story that we'll mention now, not because we, as we've said many times, not because we put special significance in days or a whole lot of faith in, say, predictive Bible codes. Let's put it that way. We mention this because it is a story that's worth noting because of the timing, or mm-hmm. because the story is out there. And we'll do this from time to time with other stories, where the story is not so much the content of the story, but the fact that a particular story is being floated.
Right.
Okay? Well, this is one of those, and it comes from a website called TrueBibleCode.com.
Mm-hmm.
It has a rather, well, let's say, alarmist headline. And the headline reads, 85% probability of United Nations Plaza being nuked between Friday evening, June 9th, and Saturday evening, June 10th, 2006.
Right. It does not say attacked. It doesn't say bombed. It says nuked. They're very specific about that. Their Bible code, so to speak, is not a skip letter or anything like that. It is taking all of Scripture. Now this, the Lord's Witnesses is the group behind this. They have a UK division and possibly a Germany division, because when you go to their website, you'll see that there's an option to read it in German.
Mm-hmm.
They take Scripture and interpret it in very strange ways. For one thing, they believe, because they are part of Jehovah's Witnesses, they believe that Jesus Christ was a human being inhabited by the angel Michael.
Okay, well, that's heresy.
Yeah, well, there are a lot of things that I believe are heretical about what they say. But when you see a headline like this that is so specific,
mm-hmm.
of course, it doesn't say 100% probability. Prophets are supposed to be 100%.
Right.
But, okay, for instance, one of the things they say, if you're familiar with the Old Testament, then you know the story of Elijah and where he challenges the pagans to a duel.
Right, the prophets
okay,
of Baal.
You get Baal to come down here and set this wood on fire, and I'll do the same thing with Jehovah God.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it's this big contest. It's very dramatic. And at the end of it all, of course, Elijah demonstrates that, you know, Jehovah is
the
true God. He is the Lord of Lords, King of Kings. And he has, previous to this, declared that there would be no rain. Well, at the end of it, he starts praying to the Lord to bring rain now. And at one point he says, he sends a boy to look. And at one point the boy comes back and says, there's a tiny cloud off in the distance. It looks like a man's hand. This site, these people take that scripture, that's a nuke.
Well,
and that's the best way I can demonstrate to our listeners how
much of a stretch.
How much of a stretch
yeah.
this site is taking. But here's the other thing. Now, I am not saying at all that these people are involved in this. I'm merely stating that Germany has a lot of terrorist ties.
Right.
So anytime you see an organization that says they're Christian, says they're pagan, says they're Gnostic, says they're atheist, it doesn't matter what they say. If they are predicting an event like this, a nuke, then you have to ask yourself, do they know something?
Right. Do they know something, or do they just want people to think something?
Exactly. It could be nothing more than just wanting to get some publicity for their
site. Or
it
might just be, right, exactly.
Or they may genuinely be deceived and genuinely believe that something's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Now, won't we be surprised if something does?
Yeah.
But one of the reasons I wanted to put this up, because frankly, I haven't seen this story many other places.
No.
The reason I wanted to put this up was to make sure that it was documented.
Yeah. And as we've said before, with other stories that are similarly spectacular or fantastic, the fact that the story is being floated and put out into the public domain is as important as the content of this story itself. Why is somebody saying this? As you know, Sharon ran through some possibilities. And of course, we have to consider the PSYOPs angle.
Yes.
Is this being put out specifically to make people think that something might happen in New York this weekend?
Exactly.
Is this a test balloon to see? Can we cause a panic? Mm-hmm. How much of a panic will we cause, and what's the result?
Oh, you go to this site, and they are specifically saying, if you live in New York, get out now.
Mm-hmm.
Download this site, take it with you, so you have access to read all of our stuff later,
mm-hmm.
because they clearly want everybody to understand Scripture the way they do.
Right.
To their credit, I believe they're wrong, but to their credit, they're very careful about trying to teach their doctrine. And I want to make this point again. We don't agree with them doctrinally.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And the key, as Sharon mentioned, is that they get it wrong when it comes to who Jesus was.
Right.
Yeah,
they're
there was
preaching
one
a different Jesus.
Key question that Jesus asked the Apostle Peter, and that's the one that we all have to answer. Who do you say that I am? And there's one right answer. And sadly, these folks don't get it. But the story and the fact that it's being put out there this week is worthy mm-hmm. of mention. Consider the source, consider their doctrine, consider their method
right.
of interpretation when you look at this story, and we'll put a link to it in the show notes at PIDradio.com. But then consider, you know, go a step further and consider, now why is this story being floated out there? Is there something beyond just a group that is not rightly dividing the mm-hmm. word of truth?
Yeah, exactly. Well, we're going to go in another direction entirely and off to Africa, because there are so many things taking place there that are ugly. And, you know, mm-hmm. when you look at prophecy, and we have all taken a look at those four horsemen,
mm-hmm.
and we've talked with people that believe they're yet to that they haven't ridden yet. We've talked to people that say, no, they've been riding all along.
Yep.
It doesn't matter which one it is, because Africa is showing us what has been happening or will be happening here. In Zimbabwe,
mm-hmm.
their leader, President Mugabe, has driven out all of the white farmers. He's replaced them with black farmers who don't necessarily know how to farm. It's not that they're not intelligent, but what it boils down to is he's ruined his farming economy.
Right. He took productive farmers off the land and replaced them with people who had no experience farming. Regardless of skin color, it would be...
That's what I mean.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I was saying.
It would make as much sense...
He put in black farmers because he didn't want whites in there.
Right.
He didn't go out and choose people who didn't know how to farm. It's just that all the farmers in that area were white.
Were white.
Which I disagree with. It shouldn't have been that way.
Right.
And I can understand... I think I can understand where he was going with it. Assuming, giving him good motives, I'll say, okay, he's trying to balance things out.
Right and ain't right and old wrong.
Exactly. But
the reality of the situation is that the farmers who were on the land and who had been working the land, had experience working the land, were descendants of the white settlers who came in and grabbed the land.
Mm-hmm.
And logistically, you just can't kick the farmers off the field, turn them over to inexperienced farmers,
right,
and expect that same kind of productivity. And he is now reaping the errors of his policies.
So much so. There's a story on here today that has a picture of a man holding up a $100,000 bill.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that is because the inflation rate in Zimbabwe is over 1,000%
right now. Yeah, and this is a Zimbabwean dollar, not a U.S. dollar.
Exactly. And it will not even buy a loaf of bread. 100,000 Zimbabwean dollars,
mm-hmm,
does not even buy a loaf of bread.
Yeah. The unofficial price now in Zimbabwe is about 120,000 Zimbabwe dollars, which is about $1.20 U.S. The exchange, mm-hmm, rate is about 1,000 to 1.
Which you may be thinking, hey, $1.20 for a loaf of bread, that's a deal. That's not bad at all. If you're only making $10 a month,
mm-hmm,
or whatever it works out to be, it's not much.
No.
That's a huge deal.
And it's really sad that what Mugabe is doing is now he is taking the farmers who are trying to make a go of it,
mm-hmm,
and he is sending soldiers out and demanding that they replant their fields according to what he wants. And what
right.
he wants are the grain crops that the government will then seize and use, mm-hmm, to keep their, you know, the officials fed.
Exactly. Now, to bring this home to you who are listening, because it's really easy to dismiss, as much as we may have hearts that are open to this, we're not there. We don't, mm-hmm, see it. We haven't experienced it. So try to bring this home. You and I, let's say something happens here in the middle of the United States, and suddenly we're cut off. And all we have is this backyard. There isn't much going on.
Mm-hmm.
But we managed to raise some vegetables, you know, enough to get by. Suddenly the government comes by and says, you can't plant that. This land now belongs to the government,
mm-hmm,
to the new, you know, state of whatever, Mex-America,
mm-hmm,
now belongs to us, and you have to plant squash.
Yeah.
You have to plant your entire backyard in squash.
Mm-hmm.
Or you have to plant your entire backyard in some drug.
Yeah, yeah. We want you to plant tobacco or coca or something like that.
Yeah. In other words, we can't afford to feed ourselves. We, mm-hmm, can't afford to buy anything because there's nothing out there. We're trying to get by. We're trying to be self-sufficient. That's what most of these black farmers, these small 10 acres or less,
mm-hmm,
they're trying to be self-sufficient in an economy that is so oppressive.
Mm-hmm.
And here the state comes in and says, your land is ours now.
Yeah,
you're
grow what we tell
we
you,
say.
And we'll come take it when it's ready.
And it's not something you can feed your family with.
Yeah.
It's something we're going to go and take, come and take, when you're done with it.
And this gets back to the prophetic imagery of the rider. Mind is gapping now. This is a rider
on the black horse.
A rider on the black horse who brings famine. And what's happening in Zimbabwe will at some point happen on a nearly global scale.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, those in power, like in Zimbabwe, President Mugabe and his supporters and allies, they'll still be fed. They're, mm-hmm, not going to go hungry.
Oh, they're living the life of ease.
It's the people on the land who are really suffering. And sadly, efforts from outside to aid the people who are suffering have to be channeled through the government officials in that nation,
mm-hmm,
which means that
they're the ones who benefit from the aid that goes to the countries there. It's really maddening, because when we in the West, you know, decide on rare occasion, or, you know, not often enough to be of assistance, you know, more often than it should, it gets bottlenecked by corrupt officials on the receiving end.
Yeah. You know, we know of a guy, we didn't get a chance to talk with him before he left to go back to Africa. He is a missionary in Kenya.
Mm-hmm.
His name is Bruce Germain. Was it brucegermain.com?
Yes. I'm going to have to look that up. I'm not sure.
Okay, you look that up. He has been over there for some time, came back over here on a mission trip to visit with his family and also to get some support. So if you are interested in knowing more about it, you can email to him. Is it .com?
It is .com, and Germain is G-E-R-M-A-I-N. Bruce Germain, all one word.
We'll put a link to that. Derek will put a link to that in the show notes.
Yep.
If you want to write over there, or if you just, you know, your heart, the Lord's putting it on your heart, you know what, Africa is, I died for those people too. If you want to help out, you know, send him a few dollars, that'd be great.
This is another mission that we can recommend, because it's somebody with whom we've had personal contact, albeit, you know, just by telephone.
Well, yeah, exactly.
But it comes highly recommended by a good friend of ours, Daniel Eaton. And so this is a mission that when you support the support is going directly to where it's needed.
100% goes right to.
Rather than through a big corporation that spends much of its, a good percentage anyway of its what's raised on administrative costs and advertising for more donations.
So, why isn't that the truth?
So, there are all kinds of problems in Africa. I mean, we could do, you know, hours just on the problems
on
that continent.
Nigeria? Oh, my gosh.
And the things that are happening there with the violence around the oil.
We've got China, Russia, platforms. And the United States, and they're stomping around trying to get the oil.
Colonialism really never ended in Africa. It just sort of changed its face. I mean, the European and Western powers aren't actually running the day-to-day affairs in the African nations, the former colonies, but we still have special ops guys and intelligence operatives on the ground in those nations, because they still have a lot of natural resources there. Mm-hmm. You know, oil, of course, is the big one, but also diamonds and rubber and all kinds of other things that we would like to exploit, and sadly for the people who are there, they are in the way of very powerful forces. And we'll say it again. See the movie The Constant Gardener.
Oh, gosh, it's so good.
Yeah, we reported on this. We mentioned a story from a couple of weeks ago in which it was shown that pharmaceutical companies were conducting trials, just like in the movie, on people at clinics in Africa in remote villages. It's a cheaper way for them to conduct their trials without maybe adhering to all of the safeguards that they would if they were doing it in a Western hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, speak of people who are in the way of something powerful. The people of Indonesia, of course, have been dealing with volcanoes in their area for as long as time has existed, probably. But Merapi is, it's choking up again. It's got all kinds of lava and smoke coming out once again, and now all of the freshwater streams are being polluted.
Turning bitter.
Mm-hmm. This is exactly turning to blood, you might say.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there was a lake around a volcano, not there, but elsewhere, that turned red recently, and I don't know if we mentioned that on there or not, but this is also an area that was hit by a 6.3 magnitude quake. So they've had to deal with that. Hundreds of thousands of people have been displaced from their homes. But more than that, now they have the constant threat, the daily threat of, will this volcano go off? Because its dome is now 100 meters high.
That's about 330 feet high.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks ugly. And as you mentioned when we talked about this last week, there are people who didn't want to leave until they received a sign from the god.
From the god of the volcano, yes, that they can leave.
Yeah. Well, again, the sight of lava rolling down the side of the mountain at me would be all the sign that I would need.
I think he's telling us to go now.
Yeah, I think so. Well, a little closer to home, and speaking of disasters, the government, you'll be happy to hear, is planning to protect all of the most important citizens in a, well, the largest ever continuity of government drill in the history of the United States. Military analyst for the Washington Post, William Arkin, is reporting that on the 19th of June, the top 4,000 people in the U.S. government, I'm not sure how they determine the top 4,000, maybe draw straws or something like that, but will be saying goodbye to their families for a few days, and they're going to head off to classified underground bunkers.
Mm-hmm. Now, some of you may instantly be thinking Mount Weather, but I'm not sure they even use that anymore.
I think it is back in service.
Is it?
There are dozens of these facilities stretched in an arc, stretching from the Maryland-Pennsylvania border all the way around through Virginia, you know, into the mountainous areas.
Yeah, into the Appalachians. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And they're all within 45 minutes to an hour of Washington, D.C. These bunkers, and Mount Weather is one. There was another that was in underneath the Greenbrier Hotel.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
That one has been decommissioned.
That one is they a tourist that attraction now.
Right. You can go through and look at this 1950s area bunker laid out to protect Congress in the event that the Yuruskis, back in, say, you know, the late 50s, early 60s Cold War, decided to launch their nukes at us. The one, of course, that is of interest to me because I made it a key part of the plot of my forthcoming novel, The God Conspiracy, Site R, which is Raven Rock, Pennsylvania.
Right.
That's where Dick Cheney hid after 9/11 and was in there for a number of days.
His undisclosed location.
Right. The location was disclosed some months later, but it's only a few miles away from Camp David, just across the state line into Pennsylvania. Underneath a granite mountain. I mean, this mountain is practically impervious. And it is also the communications nexus for the U.S. government on the East Coast.
Hmm.
You could basically run the government and all of the military units in the field from Site R.
Hmm.
And so it's a handy place to have. What's curious to us is that this is a larger drill, and basically
it's
what this
the biggest
is,
it's drill ever.
It's a bug-out drill.
Yeah.
These 4,000 government workers grab their gear, get in their cars, and head for these bunkers.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is that they're supposed to see, I guess, how quickly they can get there or whatever, and then they're going to run a war game, basically, some sort of natural disaster or some sort of war game that would require them to go hide in these underground bunkers. You know, perhaps the great and terrible day of the Lord when people go hiding underground and cry for the rocks and mountains to fall on them.
Well, you know, I think there's a lot to that. When I first studied that many, many years ago, I wasn't aware that, of course, I was only, you know, 13, 14 years old. I wasn't aware that underground bunkers existed for government employees and that they would be hiding there. I had visions of people in caves, which may be true as well. But I think taking it that way, thinking of people in highly polished and nicely lit underground bunkers.
Well, these bunkers are really well equipped. I did a lot of research on Site R especially, but also Mount Weather and some of the other underground bunkers that the government has set up. And they can basically be self-sufficient for a good long while.
Mm-hmm.
You know, their own air purification facilities, water purification facilities. You know, of course, they've got areas there for, you know, cafeteria set up and their own wastewater treatment plants and power facilities underground. And yeah, they're equipped to keep people alive under the ground, underground for a good long time until, you know, those of us on the surface have kind of either brought things back under control or until we're not here for them to worry about anymore. But even during the 1950s, when the threat of a nuclear exchange with the Soviet Union was a very real possibility, did the government ever run a drill this big? That's why we're mentioning it. 4,000 government workers are going to light out for these bunkers and participate in this exercise.
What I find interesting, too, about this is that this is just a few days before the summer solstice.
Yep.
It falls in sort of almost in the middle of an ancient Egyptian festival that sort of centered around goddess worship, which is where the month of June gets its name. That's the Roman equivalent of Hera and Isis.
Mm-hmm.
And also centers around the star Sirius and Horus worship. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the old calendar, the old Julian calendar, because we're now on the Gregorian calendar, and the way you can make that switch is to subtract 13 days. 13 days from the current date. Well, June 19th on the Julian calendar would be June 6th.
Would be 6-6 in the old calendar.
Yep.
That's very interesting. Well, this exercise is called Forward Challenge 06. It is the third major interagency exercise of this type since the Bush administration took over. Larger than the two exercises that they held last year, or the exercise last year, which was called Pinnacle, and then they had Forward Challenge 04. 31 departments and agencies, including FEMA, are taking part.
31?
Are relocating, I'm sorry. 31 departments and agencies, yeah. And up to 60 agencies will take part, but 31 are going to relocate into these bunkers. So, it is very interesting. The continuity of government bunkers will take will be tested that particular week. It's what they call the FRC, the Federal Relocation. I'm sorry, FRA, Federal Relocation Arc.
Hmm.
I think is what they called it. Anyway, I will link to some sites on this, as well as the article from William Arkin, who called this to our attention. But, yeah, there's some interesting information about Site R at the globalsecurity.org website.
Oh, I love that site.
Yeah, there's some really neat pictures there and stuff. And I actually went so far as to find somebody who had come up with a floor plan, or at least, you know, as far as I know, it's an accurate floor plan. I have no way of knowing. I'm sure I'll never be inside
there.
Oh,
you'd think they would have left some things out.
Yeah, yeah. They're not going to let me in there after the book comes out.
Not very secure if you put everything up there.
Yeah. So anyway, it is interesting, and we'll keep an eye on that, because that's a big chunk of the government to just suddenly shuttle out of town.
That's a lot of people.
All at once.
That is a lot of people.
Yeah.
Well, as we speak, Javier Solana is on his way to Iran. At least that's the scuttlebutt. And he's a busy guy. He's racking up those frequent flyer miles. He's just left Palestine, where he's been, having a little tete-a-tete with Mahmoud Abbas, trying to straighten things out. And if you've been living in underground and you don't know who Javier Solana is, he is the foreign minister, so to speak. He's the head foreign guy with the EU. And he in many ways makes foreign policy for the EU. He is a very important man. He is Jesuit in his connections, as I understand. His name, Javier, J-A-V-I-E-R, is an alternate spelling of X-A-V-I-E-R, Javier, and which we pronounce Xavier, but it's actually Javier.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another word for, way of saying, savior.
Ah.
Yep. And, of course, his last name, Solana.
Of course, has a connection to the sun.
Exactly.
There. Yeah. And, well,
there are some who say he's the Antichrist.
We've mentioned that before, and I'll link to Constance Cumby's website, because she's the one who really has done the research on him, and at the very least does a very good job of showing his New Age influences and how they might infuse his policies, policies toward the Middle East in particular. It was interesting that he was promoting a 7-year peace plan that included the Palestinians and Israel, which, if you've studied end times prophecy at all, again, that 7-year period of peace,
the covenant of 7 years that he breaks in the middle
of that. Will certainly be familiar to you. So don't know if I buy the identification of Solana as the Antichrist.
I don't either.
But we do keep an eye on him, just as a representative of the EU, Europa. And what Russ Dizdar believes will be the seat of the Antichrist's power when he does eventually rise to power, which will take place, as Russ says, after the Black Awakening.
That's right.
And the U.S. is taken out of the way.
You know, here's another connection, actually, with things that we've been talking about regarding possible terrorist activity, the continuity of government, COG, the COG. The World Cup games are going to be held in Germany soon.
Right.
And I'm not really sure when they start, but it's either this week or next week. I think they start soon.
I know that Ahmadinejad was interviewed by Der Spiegel, and they asked him if he was going to go to the games, and he said, no, I'm watching TV.
Actually, there's a rumor that he might go now.
Really?
I saw that headline. Didn't read the story, but I saw the headline that he said he might go. Now, maybe they were just stretching his answer. Also, going on now is the G8 meeting in Russia. Mm-hmm. It's the early stages of it. So it's where the education people and the agricultural people and all these different ministers get together. Putin is the head of that. He's the president of the G8 this year, which is the G7 plus Russia is what G8 is.
Yeah.
And I think it's in July, mid-July, that the actual head honcho meeting is with all the heads of state, that they will all be meeting in St. Petersburg. So there are a lot of things going on this summer that have potential for, I would think, if I were a terrorist, I'd be looking at something big. You want to make a splash. Mm-hmm. So these cells that, and that's another thing that we haven't talked about a whole lot about. The weekend news has been filled with raid here and a raid there, and this raid is connected with that. And did we even talk on Friday about the picture from the Canadian raid?
No, I don't think we did.
Well, we should probably close with that because I think that is so telling.
Well, it was very interesting when the story came out about the raid that was conducted in Toronto where 17 men were arrested, 12 adults and 5 minors, and charged with plotting a terrorist attack involving ammonium nitrate explosives. Now, ammonium nitrate is a fertilizer. You mix it with fuel oil, you get a really big explosion. Ammonium nitrate fuel oil was what the government planned to explode in its Divine Strike test, which was put on indefinite hold. So, ANFO is pretty explosive stuff. It is claimed that it was 1 ton of this material that blew up the Murrah building in Oklahoma City. When they held their press conference, which was a joint effort, the investigation, the arrest, and the press conference were all joint efforts by the Canadian Intelligence Service, the CSIS, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, and a number of local police forces. They displayed items that were taken in this raid. And as we looked at the photos, which were published by the Toronto Star, we began to notice that almost everything on display on this table, you know, these items that were collected and put on display for the press to show that these guys were really planning to do something deadly, were items that we possess here in our own home.
They're common household items.
Now,
a voltmeter, some duct tape.
Right.
Flashlights.
A bunch of flashlights.
Now, granted, we don't keep any weapons in this home.
No.
There was a German Luger.
Yeah, a 9mm Luger pistol was on display, and there was a 20-pound bag of ammonium nitrate. The caption underneath the photo added the disclaimer that the ammonium nitrate was not seized in the raid, but was displayed for demonstration purposes only. So they didn't show the actual ammonium nitrate that was seized. There was a door that was on display that had a bunch of holes in it. Reporters assumed that they were bullet holes, but since the law officials who gave the press conference didn't comment on the door, we don't know that. So it was a little bit unnerving. It may well be that these guys were planning.
It could well be that they were
terror
planning
attack.
Something.
And
apparently, they were on the internet. They were part of a. They got into an online group or something, and they were lured in by someone from Canada because two of the guys were from the U.S.
Yeah, and they are said to have taken part in some military training exercises north of Toronto as part of the investigation that was revealed at the press conference. But it was just a little unnerving looking at the items that were displayed as tools of the terrorist. and looking into a box and seeing, okay, a couple of cell phones in there. Yeah, we've got some old cell phones we don't use anymore that are in a box in our closet.
Mm-hmm.
A bunch of wires. Yeah, I've got some wires left over from some home improvement projects here. Utility knife. Yeah, I got one of those. A couple of two-way radios. Yeah, we've got those from when Nicole was younger so we could keep track of her when we were at the mall.
Uh-huh.
These are all things that we had in our home, and these were being displayed as tools of the terrorist. Mm-hmm. Now,
they may well be.
They may well be. In the case of these fellows, they may well have been trying to do something. But what it may, it just, you know, call this is the paranoia tinfoil hat on the head here. It's the pointy one with the little propeller on top.
The head or the hat?
Yes. The thought crosses your mind as you look at these things with a critical eye. And on the one hand, you know, you say, okay, this may well be just a fine example of police and intelligence work by the Canadians. And if it is, then good on you. More power to you. On the other hand, you think of a guy like Jose Padilla. Probably not a savory guy. Probably not a guy that I would want our daughter to, you know, bring home and introduce to us.
No.
But a guy who was declared an enemy of the state and without even enough evidence to charge him, apparently, until forced by a case that went to the Supreme Court. He was declared an enemy of the state, which, according to this administration, gives the president the right to incarcerate him indefinitely. Now, what if somebody decided they didn't like the message that we were putting out? Didn't like the email that you were sending to your friends? Because the NSA can read it, folks.
Oh, yeah.
What if your favorite Patriot radio host, say Alex Jones or John Stantmiller, says something that the government doesn't like, and they decide to do a sneak and peek without a warrant, because mm-hmm. the FBI, under the Patriot Act, has the right to do that. And they go into my, or if they come by here, and they go look in the utility room, or they go look in the closet, the storage closet, and they come out, well, see, a couple of extra cell phones here, some wiring, some batteries.
Wait a minute.
He could detonate a bomb by remote with this stuff.
Yeah, and look at this. They've got a whole bunch of water stored up, and they've mm-hmm. got food stored up. And
now, maybe we're being a little too paranoid about it, but those were the thoughts that ran through my head when I saw the pictures in the Toronto Star. It looked like everyday stuff, and they probably have more on which to charge these guys, to base a case on these guys, than just these items. But it just seemed to me that in the environment that we're seeing in the United States right now, where the government can come into your home without a warrant and look around, can read your email or mm-hmm. listen to your phone calls mm-hmm. without a warrant, that it would be easy enough for somebody, if they wanted to build a case against you with just common household items.
It is a little scary in this day and age. Well, let me add something to this mix here. Apparently, according to the LA Times, the Army manual is being changed in its next printing
mm-hmm.
to leave out the Geneva detainee rules that apply to humiliating and degrading treatment.
So we're talking about the Geneva Convention that's supposed to protect prisoners of war?
Yep.
And they're taking that out of the Army training manual?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The Pentagon has decided to omit from new detainee policies a key tenet of the Geneva Convention that explicitly bans humiliating and degrading treatment, according to knowledgeable military officials. That's where the writer of this, Julian Barnes from the LA Times, apparently has some inside information about this, but this is not good news, especially in light of Abu Ghraib
mm-hmm.
and some of the accusations about Gitmo.
Right.
Just the fact that people are being detained without a warrant bothers mm-hmm. me, but also just the fact that we've got the scandal right now about Haditha, which mm-hmm. is not with regard to an arrest or a prisoner of war, but there are so many things right now that the military is the black eyes that the military has taken about behavior of certain people within the military, that seems to me like this would be a bad idea.
I agree. We're looking at a situation which the commandant or the commandant
commandant
of the Marine Corps,
I don't know that he's called Commandant. I think he's probably called Commander.
I think that,
Commandant, that's German.
Yeah, I'm probably getting it wrong. Anyway, the senior officer in charge of the Marine Corps is finding it necessary to fly to Iraq to explain to Marines that we don't use excessive force against civilians. That is really an ugly situation, and it makes you wonder why at this particular point in time the military would see fit to remove the training about the Geneva Convention from its manuals.
I don't know.
Well, tomorrow night we begin the final interview in our series on prophecy, and fittingly enough, we started on 6/6/06. And given the task, the unenviable task of anchoring this series, is author David W. Lowe, who's written a wonderful book, which is an excellent addition to any library for as a reference for people who are serious about piecing together the sequence of events leading up to the end times, leading up to the apocalypse. The book is called Earthquake Resurrection, and it has a bit of a twist to it. We've talked with David about it before. We'll put a link in the show notes beginning tomorrow night to the book and also to the original interview in which we discussed his book in depth. And the twist is basically that he believes that the physical act of resurrecting millions of believers into immortal, incorruptible, that's the one I wanted, bodies will create the energy or enough of an energy release to trigger the global cataclysms that are prophesied by the, you know, all of those angry old prophets from the Old Testament.
It, you know, it's really a compelling theory, and I just think there's something to it. So you don't want to miss Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday PID Radio this week with David W. Lowe as our guest. We have been teasing about a contest, and we're still not going to tell you everything about it because it's not going to start until Conspiracy Week.
Yeah, which begins
Conspiracy
next week.
Series.
Yeah.
But again, if you haven't stocked up on your tinfoil or if you haven't started drawing up plans, we recommend you do so because, well, it's just going to be worth your while.
We want to make sure that everyone is properly equipped with your reflective headgear.
You know, by the way, I do want to bring this up. This has nothing to do with that, but we were speaking earlier about Mount Merapi in Java, and I just saw this news alert come in, and apparently the Indonesian authorities have evacuated many of the people living on that western slope. Wow. So hundreds of people, about 600 people, have been evacuated, forced, I'm sure, because many of those were the pagans who insisted, we got to wait till the god lets us know. Apparently it's... They got the message. Oh, he's spewing lava down on us. That says go now.
That's even had it underlined. Yeah, that's I'm glad to hear that because lives will be saved by the removal of people from the side of that mountain. I'm going to toot my own horn for just a moment, if that's okay.
You toot away, honey.
Taylor Kent, the Snarky Avenger. We had a discussion with him last week, Monday. And that is now available at his podcast. He's doing a series of interviews and posting those on once a week basis. And I'm the featured interview right now at the Snark Infested Waters podcast.
Ah.
So post a link, spend about an hour talking to Taylor about what we do here on PID Radio, about Iron Dragons, about forthcoming writing projects that you and I are working on. And then we talked about the state of Christianity in America today and various and assorted other things. And had a great time. It was an hour that went by very quickly for me, but maybe that's because, like usual, I did most of the talking.
Well, honey, you were the guest. I think you were supposed to.
Well, that's true. And maybe that's why it went by so quickly. Because I was just so fascinated with the guest's discussion.
I'm always fascinated with your discussion.
One of my dad's favorite pictures, and he loved to share this with everybody. In fact, he made sure that people on the forum had seen it, I think, was the picture of me at the age of about three talking into a telephone.
You know, we used to have your first recording. I don't know if I still have a copy of that, but at one time I had an audio tape of Derek's very first recording. If we find that, we will upload it and let you hear it as well. You were about three or four.
No, it wasn't four.
It must have been three.
I was pretty young because I could only count to four, which I did during that recording over and over again.
Well, honey, that was the day. And you know what? You made your dad very, very proud. Just like you make me proud every time I get to do a show with you.
Oh.
Well, we, I think, are going to have to wrap up the blather because the clock is saying we've blathered on long enough.
Yes.
We've over-blathered.
Well, I don't know if that's possible, but...
I think we probably can over-blather.
Yeah, I'm
Ask
sure.
Ask any of our listeners, trust
Absolutely.
Me.
Well, we appreciate you wading through all the blather and getting to the end. Glad to meet you here. Our email address for your comments, suggestions, whether it be more blather, less blather, more guests, guest suggestions, questions, and anything like that. Just send them to the email address, radio@peeringintodarkness.com.
And you can always join us at the forum. It's peeringintodarkness.com/forum, where as of last count, we had 666 topics. So get in there and post a new one.
That's right.
until
tomorrow.
Until tomorrow, yes, indeed. We need some special music when we do that. I'll be Sharon Gilbert.
I'm Derek Gilbert. Thank you for listening to PID Radio.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Gonna step up to the microphone.